Hello, this is Travis Wilkes. Today, on March 30th, 2005, I am conducting an interview with Ray Wise. Ray, how you doing today?
I'm doing very well, except for a frog in my throat.
Well, let's go ahead and kick into it and take us back in time a little bit here. Now, what was your life like before the military or the war itself?
Well, I was born and raised in Great Falls, and the normal bringing up, my dad was worked for a road building contractor, and we lived basically in Great Falls. And I went to the University of Montana and ended up in ROTC, which got me into the military. And at the time of Pearl Harbor, I was a junior, so we got into advanced ROTC so we could stay in college and graduate without being called into the services.
Okay, so what you're saying is you went in on your own accord?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. You were not drafted, you
no,
went straight.
No.
And you had college, you had a four-year degree entirely finished already?
No, I was able to stay at the university for my junior and senior year because of advanced ROTC.
Oh, okay.
And I graduated in 1943. With a business degree headed towards law school.
But, oh.
The Army changed that for me.
And what were you hoping to achieve from your service time?
Well, at that time, I had just hoped to get through it and finish and get back to law school at Missoula.
Okay.
But that didn't occur, and but that was the idea.
Yeah.
I hadn't planned being a career service man.
It was just kind of a short-term
goal. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And did you have any political leanings, Ray, before the war?
Not a lot.
Did you pretty much take the same stand as the rest of your family?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and of course in those days it was the after Pearl Harbor, there was no question that the country was under attack and we had to do something about it. So we were all for getting in and getting it over with.
And what were your greatest daily concerns prior to the war? I assume that school, I'm sure, was your one priority.
Just getting through school.
And what was your family's perception regarding military service and you going into the military?
They were for it. My dad had been in the Navy in World War I. He was lied about his age and went in early and served, I think, about 2 years on a destroyer. And when the war ended, he was unhappy because he was a single man on a Navy destroyer protecting the country from San Diego to Los Angeles. So he was all for me doing something. He kind of wanted me to go into the Navy, but that wasn't an option at Missoula. So,
did his previous military experience, did that influence you somewhat?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It encouraged me to. He got through World War I fine. So,
and your father kind of shone a bright light.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
on the whole military service.
Yeah. He had a good time. he was single and. Never fired a shot in anger between San Diego and Los Angeles.
And what were your perceptions of the war itself and its combatants prior to the U.S. entering into the war? As far as maybe even Germany and Japan, what were your perceptions about those countries?
Well, I had studied some about World War I history, so I knew something about Germany and the Treaty of Versailles, which put them in a bad light. With the, you know, they were pretty well pushed back, and they were upset because of the Treaty of Versailles, which was worked out. But so I pretty much knew what they were doing.
And your opinions regarding U.S. actions prior to the war, kind of our isolationism type feel, the way we were just trying to stay out of things?
I was pretty much for it because we lost a lot of people in World War I, over there, and it didn't accomplish that much as far as we were concerned. And so I was not eager to go in.
Now, there's a lot of speculation as far as World War II and really what drug us into it. As far as the speculation goes, there's big events that America and the American people like to focus on. How do you think we ended up involved?
Well, the Japanese invasion of Pearl Harbor was a direct attack on us, and I think most of us believe that unless something was done, Japan would attack us from the west, and Germany would attack us from the east. So we had to do something.
Stuck between a rock and a hard
spot. That's right. And it hadn't been for World War II, some of us may be speaking Japanese or German now,
Absolutely. Absolutely. And where were you getting all your information before you actually went in the military?
Well, this was before television. Mm-hmm. So radio and newspapers were about the only thing we had.
Okay. Is there anything back during that time in on the radio or in the newspapers that you remember very vividly?
Who was the fellow that reported from Edward R. Murrow, reported on the radio from London. And I was very impressed with him because he pretty much told it what was going on over there. And that's the one that I can think of offhand.
Kind of he made you feel the closest to what was actually
mm-hmm.
happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And did your heritage or ethnicity affect your perceptions of the combatants? We have kind of spoken that your heritage is pretty split, correct, Ray? I mean, you have quite a few different ethnicities in your
mm-hmm.
family.
Well, no, we were... I had one grandfather that was in the Spanish-American War or whatever, and some of the history, they used to talk about the Civil War a lot, and so... and being from the West, I had a grandmother who, my grandfather was with the 1st Cavalry Regiment, and they were moving from St. Louis to Spokane, Washington, 2 years after the Custer Battlefield. They came through here on a covered wagon train, 2 years after the Custer Battlefield. So. And he was a sergeant in the 1st Cavalry, so we've had military people in the background all my life.
Okay. And where were you, Ray, and what were you doing when you found out that Pearl Harbor was attacked?
I was in the living room of the SAE house in Missoula, listening to the radio.
I'm sure that was quite
and
the shake.
All of us were 1A... category for the military, so we started looking around to see what we could do.
Okay. And what was your initial response as far as what did you think was going to happen from that point?
Oh, we were going to end up in the military somewhere.
Okay.
In fact, some of our friends had actually left school and volunteered. They wanted to get into the Air Force or into Navy or had some ideas, and some of it had already gone in at that point.
And what were your families, what were their perceptions, and how did they respond to the attack on Pearl Harbor?
They were the same way. They just thought we can't let it happen again. So they were all for going to war.
Would you say as far as family, community, and the nation itself, that there was a banding together?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, well... You know, when you're attacked and we got 1,200 sailors still in the Arizona battleship in Pearl Harbor now. When you stop and think about that, it's quite a blow.
Yeah, there seem to be places in the world where we have a permanent base,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, and a permanent presence that is always a constant reminder of what is happening.
We haven't been there. I haven't gotten to. We've never been to Hawaii, but if I were to go to Hawaii, the two places I would want to see would be the Arizona Memorial and the Punch Bowl cemetery up on the hill somewhere.
Now, how did you feel about Jeanette Rankin not voting for the war?
Jeanette Rankin was an individual, and she was a lady that had very strong feminist. I think she voted for it as a woman more so than as a representative. I think she just figured war isn't good for kids, and so, and it was her opinion, so she did it.
And after enlisting with the U.S. Army and leaving for officers training school, what were your expectations, Ray?
Well, to get through it. And, you know, go ahead and do a job. And I was headed to be a infantry second lieutenant platoon leader, which is one of the most dangerous jobs in the Army. So I just hoping to get through.
Did you... Was there a particular reason that you chose that branch?
Well, it's the only ROTC that they had at Missoula.
Okay.
I would have had to have left school and volunteered to get into the Air Force or the Marines or anything else, and I wanted to stay and graduate.
Okay. And as far as people from your family and community, was there anybody close to you that was drafted that really didn't want to see any wartime?
I had a cousin who was 10 months older than I was that volunteered for the Navy, and he was in by this time. And I had a cousin from Shoto who was, I think, a year older than me, and he was... in the Army, and was drowned in Seattle getting on a troop ship. Somehow, when they were loading the troop ship, he and some other guys fell off the gangplank, and they had all their full gear on and drowned before they could get them out. And I had two uncles that were, and one of them I know was a permanent Navy man. He was an officer, I don't know what rank, but so we had active people in.
Okay. Now, as far as your family and friends go around this point in time, you were seeing people getting drafted around you.
Oh, yeah.
You were you were going in just of your own accord, with other people.
Yeah.
What were the reactions that you were seeing from, let's say, maybe family members, people that you knew, that kind of thing? What kind of phrases or talk do you remember that just sticks in your mind as you were making this dramatic decision?
Well, most people said it has to be done, so, and you're the age bracket to do it, so go ahead and do it.
Kind of a given, a little bit different than it is nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And where did you do your basic training?
At Fort Benning, Georgia.
And how long?
90 days.
90 days.
The term 90-day wonder promoted us to corporals because you had to be a non-com at least to go to Fort Benning, Georgia.
Okay.
And then 90 days later, I was a second lieutenant.
Okay. And how did they train you to be a leader?
Oh, the slogan of the OCS is follow me. That's the thing they start. The first thing you hear is that here you're going to learn the meaning of follow me. And that's where they started, and everything pointed you that way, that you are going to have people under you, and that your first job is to know your job and protect them. So they did a real good job with it. The Fort Benning was a wonderfully organized, and we started out at 6 o'clock in the morning and went to bed at 10 o'clock at night, except Sundays, I think.
And were you kept informed of world affairs during basic training?
We had I think about every day they had bulletins posted posted, and they kept us up to date.
Do you feel that any of those bulletins were worded in a, I guess, one-sided way, or do you think it gave the full story?
I don't think so.
Okay. And how was military life different for you from your civilian life? Obviously, there's some difference.
Regimented. Yes, sir, and no, sir.
And how did you feel about being away from home?
Well, I just like anybody else. We've missed it, and of course, you want to remember those were the days before computers and emails and all of this. Sometimes you could get to a telephone on weekends to call home, but it was expensive, and the lines were usually busy. So letters were about the only communications you had. A little different than now. People in Iraq, they can talk and email to their family every day if they want.
Now, you, as far as writing letters, was this something that you could do any day, or was there a lot of time for it? Or, okay. Mm-hmm.
And they were free.
Yeah. And how much contact did you have with people at home? Obviously, the letters
were
the main.
Very little. Because even the telephone service wasn't as good as it is now. You'd go to the telephone, and all circuits are busy, which you very seldom hear now. Just because of the equipment.
So would the guys, would they wait?
Oh yeah,
for
you'd
a while.
You'd stand in line, go back, the end of the line, and go through it again.
Okay. And what do you remember most about basic training? What sticks in your mind?
The fact that you had an awful lot to learn, and during the course of it, we fired every weapon in the Army on ranges, and we did a lot of marching. The PE was the big chain. We'd get up and do physical drill every morning before breakfast. And one of the big things, an Army buddy of mine was next to me, and Lai Wyrick from Georgia had gone to military school, to high school. And he kept us in line and got us through basic training. And in fact, he saved us one night. We were on a map reading course. I don't know whether you ever hit it on your basic training or not. They'd start you at point A in the middle of the night, and you had to end up at another road, which was about 2 miles away at the same point you started from. It went from 1, 2, 3 down to ABC, and they planned it so you had to cross about 3 or 4 little creeks and hills and dales and trees and forests. And when we got where we were supposed to be, we started off at 7 or 8 or something like that, and we ended up at P or Q, and this Wyrick said we're way off because the 1 should end up with A and the 2's B's, and so we should be up around F or G somewhere, and we went back a ways and moved up and came in, and we passed by I think two or three stations. we'd have flunked it if he hadn't have known where we were supposed to end up.
And what did you like the most about basic training, and what did you like the least?
Well, the most we liked most was the 10-minute breaks and Sunday off, and the least like was just the having to be somewhere every minute, because it was programmed right down to minutes.
Constant babysitting.
Mm-hmm. And you were on the go. And they also, Fort Benning's a big place. They had cattle trucks to move us. They were very similar to the cattle trucks that you see now on the highway, only they were closed in, and they had 3 rows of benches. And you went in no matter what uniform or clothes you had on. You sat in these straddled these benches, and for an hour or so sometime till you got where you were going, and it was not first-class transportation.
And what did you do for recreation during basic training, during your off time?
Oh, they had a pretty good library, and they had PXs. You could buy books and magazines, and they had movies about every night if you didn't have some night work to do. They did a lot of, even then, they gave us a lot of night training. And of course, that's right now the difference in the American Army and most of the other armies of the world is that the American Army works at night and the others don't. And in fact, one of the things I remember of basic training, they took us out about 45 minutes before sunset. We went out, sat in a bunch of bleachers, and just sat there. And they said, now listen to what's going on. And you could hear trucks and people talking and noise around. And they said, just keep listening. And it got dark. And all of a sudden, you could hear night sounds, birds or something, and it was quiet. And they said, remember this, when you get out, that at night you make noise that you don't realize it. It's just like those birds that are, whatever they're doing over there, you can hear them at night, the daytime you can. So there was a lot of things like that that they were very good at explaining to you.
And what was it like meeting people from around the country?
It was fun. We were coming from an ROTC unit. There was about, I think, 30 of us from Montana, from the University of Montana, and most of the others were ROTC graduates also. But we did have a lot of people from regular enlisted men that had been assigned, sergeants and people that wanted to go to OCS. So it was fun. And as I said, my best buddy was from Milledgeville, Georgia. And the sad thing about it, Milledgeville is on the edge of the big swamp down there. And this guy was a hunter and a fisherman, and he said, after the war, I want you to come down here and I'll show you the swamp, and I want to come up to Montana and hunt and fish up there. But he didn't make it. He got killed I think the Bulls, after about the time of the Battle of the Bulls.
Did you ever get an opportunity to meet any of his family?
Never got back to Georgia.
Okay. And did you sense any tension as you were around such a melting pot of people from around the country? Were there any?
We didn't realize, being from Montana, that they're still fighting the Civil War down in the South. Yeah, it was a surprise. You know that it's still there. A lot of the Southerners, the Northerners don't care anymore. Some of them do. But the Southerners, it's part of their heritage, the Civil War. And they still talk about it.
What kind of things do guys say to you?
Oh, they call us Yankees every now and then. And tease us. And of course, from Montana, we'd say, oh, you guys, we were out fighting Indians while you guys were fighting back, Civil War back here. We were out on the frontier fighting Indians and chasing buffaloes.
Did any of them ever try to preach to you shove their cause down your throat?
No. But they were, these guys are all educated and young guys like we were, and they would talk to us mostly in a kidding way. So there was never anything serious about it, other than when I got out. I went back to Fort Bragg to get out after I left the service, and we were going to be there for 17 days. And another buddy of mine was from Raleigh, where close to Fort Bragg, and they found some friends of theirs across the street. We were married on our honeymoon then, and they found a room for us to stay. And this older people who had kids grown and gone, and they almost didn't take us in because we were Yankees. They turned out to be the most wonderful. They were second pair of parents for us, and we corresponded with them at Christmas time until they died. Another, 15, 20 years. But they weren't sure. They wanted a couple of Yankees living in their house with them.
Now, how well, Ray, do you feel basic training prepared you for actual combat?
About as good as it could. You can't. Combat, you have to learn in combat.
There's a lot of physical things they teach you, and there's a lot of psychological things they teach you. Anything that they were teaching you psychologically that really stuck out?
Well, just that that you're going to be scared. And anybody that's been in combat says they weren't scared, wasn't in combat. Because it's a different situation. You can't describe it. And they tried to tell you that, but of course you can't. They could put you out. We did quite a few live fire demonstrations where we would be under barbed wire, crawling somewhere. They'd shoot machine gun, live machine guns over your head, and you could hear it pop. And they'd shoot some rifles and things. But you can't. You can't prepare yourself for it, but they tried.
And as far as physically, how well do you think that they prepared you?
About as good as they could.
Okay.
I was a fighting 155 pounder then. I'm 189 now.
Is there any other? We've kind of touched on some of the training, like the night training and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that really sticks out in your mind from your basic training experience?
Well, the one thing, we all, of course, were officer candidates, and they rotated in your, we were in platoons, just like we would be when we got out. They rotated officers, and when it was your turn to be the second lieutenant platoon leader, is quite a shock to realize you're up there giving commands.
Absolutely.
But they put everybody to the test. And before our class, I graduated in 43. Up to that time, when you graduated from college in advanced ROTC, you got your commission right there. They changed it in our year, and we had to pass basic training at Benning, and they washed out about 20% of them that went there. They went back into the services as privates, I guess.
Now, do you feel yourself that the training was rushed, or do you feel it was adequate, and why?
Well, it was adequate for the time they had, but we could have used more. Or say, after we got out of basic training, they sent us to a training division for another 90 days. I went to the 69th Infantry Division in Camp Shelby, Mississippi, in Fayetteville, Mississippi. And it was a training division. They were getting it ready to go overseas, and you went in and out. I was there 90 days. As a platoon leader, so. But that was it wasn't long enough, but it helped. And when I reported in, I remember went to a captain, our company commander. He had been in the service, and it seems like he had an injury or something. And when he called us in and individually and talked to us, he said, "Now, Lieutenant Wise, you're gonna have Sergeant Hale as your platoon sergeant." He was a staff sergeant, and I don't know what the tech is now, E5 or whatever, but he's a good man. He's been in the service. Listen to him. Do what he tells you to do. And I did. And he helped that unit. Was good. At least I had this Sergeant Hale was a real good guy, and he knew He knew his job and he knew my job. And when I'd get out of line, he'd tell me.
Do you find that to be a nice blend?
You bet.
Non-commissioned
you bet.
And commissioned yeah. officers?
You have to. And one of the things that OCS did, it told us to respect the NCOs because they ran the Army. And they do. The most important man in a company is the first sergeant. No matter who the captain is, the first sergeant is the one that runs the company and the one that you listen to and get to know.